Beauty is terror. Whatever we call beautiful, we quiver before it.
Welcome to the Busy Girls Book Club. We are bringing you all the updates you want on those super popular book talk books and letting you know whether they're worth your time and whether you have the time to read them if you're a busy young professional. And today's episode is extra exciting because we have a busy girls first. So I'm Caitlin.
I'm Casey.
And I'm Catherine. So the book that we're doing this week is something that's been going around book talk, but it's kind of a resurgence because this book was written in the 1990s. It's The Secret History by Donna Tartt. And a summary of this book is this man in the 1980s, this college student, moves to the idyllic Vermont and he's wanting to major in Greek or in some sort of language studies, but he finds out that in order to major in Greek, you have to join this kind of group and you have to kind of decommit from all these other things and all these other languages. And it's kind of, it seems a little culty, let's be real. So he joins this group, but he finds out things are not always what they seem and that there's some mystery behind this group of oddballs all majoring in ancient Greek in an idyllic college in Vermont. And that's kind of where we start. I mean, the first chapter alludes to a murder of one of the members of the group. So, you know, it's going to be a ride.
Yeah. What you didn't know is that it was going to be the slowest ride of your life.
All right.
Oh boy.
I will say I did today learn why it has resurged.
Why?
It was a Read with Jenna book pick.
Am I supposed to know who Jenna is?
like Jenna, Hoda and Jenna.
Oh, like Jenna Bush Hager.
Yeah, it was a Read with Jenna book pick.
Why did so?
You know, like Reese Witherspoon book club, DNA book club. This is the NBC version.
Got it.
Very interesting. Yes. Well, Donna Tartt, whether you knew about it or not, is a very successful author. Her book that was maybe more well known before the resurgence was The Goldfinch, which won the Nobel Prize. The Pulitzer Prize, whatever the book prize is.
Recently became a movie in the last several years. Eddie Redmayne stars in it, I believe.
Believe so.
Yeah. And I do love Eddie Redmayne, so. But I haven't watched it. Anyway, before we get into the meaty parts of this discussion, and boy, is it going to be a good one. Do you guys have reviews?
Oh, sorry. Just to interject real quick. It was the Pulitzer Prize for fiction in 2014, The Goldfinch.
In 2014, it was written in 90. No, no, that one was written later. Never mind. I did look that up before. This was
the other one was written in like 2008, 2009, I want to say.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, do either of you want to go first?
Okay. I got a 5-star review. Just because I had a feeling no one else would. So this is Bo Warner on Storygraph. This is one of my favorite books I've ever read. It is genuinely astounding. The characters pop, the descriptions are beautiful, and it is absolutely thrilling. It captivated me from beginning to end. Also had a lot to say about elitism and university life I've wanted to articulate ever since entering academia. Amazing.
I mean, sure, but it could have been shorter.
Okay. Well, read your reviews.
Okay. Well, you assumed correctly. I had a 1-star review. And the reason why I had this review and it popped out to me is I think it really speaks to our podcast and as a busy girl, because this person blatantly states she's a busy girl when she was reading this book. So 1-star, this is what it says. Lowering my rating to 1-star because let's face it, this was awful and boring as fuck. Please shut the fuck up. It took me 4 months to finish this book, and mostly because I was dealing with uni and having several mental breakdowns. Also, the second part of this book was boring as fuck.
Yeah. All right. I also have a 1-star from Goodreads. It is To be honest, if I wanted the thoughts of a bunch of classist elitists who know dead classic languages, I'd just have dinner with my family.
Was that insulting the book or her family?
Both.
I would be friends with this girl.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. So overall Goodreads, 4.17 out of 5. Overall Amazon, 4.2 out of 5. If you catch anything from this discussion we've been hinting to, you might guess some of our star ratings. I'm going to go first. I gave it 3 stars. It was fine. It was super long and drawn out, but whatever. Didn't hate it. Ended up being a psychological thriller. Did not expect that, but that's that. 3 stars. It was fine. Stefan's laughing.
Here is where we come clean. I'm about on page 180 of this book. And we'll probably stay there forever. I simply cannot drag myself through it. Every single time I picked up this book, I've fallen asleep. It is like watching paint dry. But if the paint was J.D. Salinger, like it...
Yes!
I have never read a book that I knew going in that it was written by Donna Tartt, so I knew it was a woman. But the entire time, the only thing I can think is if I had read this book blind, I would have bet like my life savings it was written by a man. It is like just, I mean, I don't even know what my thoughts are because my thought is boring, confusing, don't understand. And I've gotten to one of the plot twists. I don't know how the book ends, obviously, but I did not find it worth the wait. I saw it coming because it's alluded to the whole time. And maybe this is an unpopular opinion. Trying to set up a bunch of unreliable narrators is not groundbreaking or interesting, particularly when they're all boring.
Okay, yeah. Catherine?
So this is where I also come clean. I hit the 50% mark and wanted to throw my Kindle across a wall and said, I don't care. Like a big plot twist had just happened. And I said, I could give no shits about this. And that's not to say the writing is good, mm-hmm. but Lord Almighty, is it drawn out? Like you can be descriptive without being like dull and just she basically negates her own descriptions because you're so bored by the end of the descriptions.
And here's the thing, guys, we've pushed this back a few times because
mm-hmm. we haven't been able to finish.
And we debated even doing this episode, but we feel like this is a very realistic thing when it comes to deciding whether a popular book is worth reading or not. And two of our friends here decided not.
It's so, been 3 weeks and I've only read 180 pages. So I read Priory of the Orange Tree in 4 weeks. And it's over 800.
Yeah. And that, like, both Casey and I have read tomes of books and finished them and felt okay about them. We have managed to finish like books that have no plot and just characters. Like we've even reviewed them on this podcast and we're totally fine with that. Both of us, unlike Caitlin, both of us actually like when there's no plot to a story, if there's really interesting descriptive characters. And so it's pretty surprising that it's the two of us that couldn't finish this book.
I know. I was honestly shocked. Like, just because Caitlin is always the one who does not like the like windy road books. And yeah, I was reading it and I was like, I just can't do it at all.
I'm really proud of myself because I'm like the least sophisticated one here. And I dug through this sucker.
I don't know if I'd say that. But I normally like literature. This book made me question myself. I was like, do I like literature?
A lot of people are branding this as a modern classic. I don't know if it's because it reads like the ancient Greeks wrote it or what, but...
This book is Jane Austen with none of the fun. Mm-hmm. With absolutely 0% of the personality, none of the feminism.
Actually, they're the opposite. It's very sexist.
Yeah, extremely yeah. sexist and homophobic.
Yeah. And I'm like... Yeah,
trigger warnings, I guess.
Yeah.
And I get it. Like, she's writing characters. It's not necessarily her perspective. But none of the characters learn shit. They're just awful. Here's the thing.
I think there is an audience for this book. Clearly there is. And like I said, it was whatever. I mean, I actually rated it higher than Babel. I don't know. Just because I will say this before we get into the meaty questions. Every tiny word has a meaning in the end. Like, you pick up on things that were pieces you had no idea were pieces. I'm not saying it was like satisfying, but it was masterful. So I think that's why people end up liking it when they get to the end.
I might finish it just because it really bothers me to leave books unfinished, but that's going to be probably another 2 months from now. So
we'll update you all.
Yeah.
Next year.
I have a hard time. The point actually where I really knocked this book is that there's one female character and she's absolutely paper thin. And she is just a prop for the main character's sexual desire. Which
seems more later. You haven't gotten there, but yes.
But that's why it's hard to critique a book you haven't finished, especially if it's literature, because lit tends to be this like laying the pieces, slow burn development. Everything is different by the end. But I'm just like, I cannot imagine a more unenthralling beginning. Like, the most unlikable main character with the most boring start to a novel. Like, give me something.
Well, okay. So without critiquing, I guess, let's make this a discussion since y'all can't rightfully critique anyway.
Yeah.
So our first discussion question, which I feel like you can answer most of these, and I know Catherine went and read the summary of the rest of the book.
Yes, I spark noted it. I went back to my old ways of freshman English class. Right.
So from what you've read, plot or character driven? Okay. I feel like the points they've gotten to, it's been all character. In the end, it ends up more plot driven. The characters are kind of along for the ride. The main character, especially, he kind of just like stepped in shit, basically.
Yeah.
But the first half is legitimately just this dude wandering around college.
Uh-huh. Trying to fit into a group of elitist ancient Greek majors.
Yeah.
And doing a lot of drugs and alcohol.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, and then I went and snorted cocaine with so-and-so in the bathroom and went to class. I was like, what?
Okay. Second question. Have you read other books by the author? I haven't, but we kind of mentioned earlier, The Goldfinch is another very famous book by Donna Tartt. You guys read it?
I have not.
No, but here is where I have a anecdote. So my mom read The Goldfinch, and I had a very long conversation with her about Donna Tartt and about The Goldfinch and her experience, because she read it for book club. So she was given a deadline. She read it, and she said, it was the most beautifully written, long-ass book I've ever read. She was just like, it was so drawn out. Like, everything was too long. It felt like I was wading through mud, but it's so beautifully written. But she was just like, but I didn't see the appeal of it, because it was, I think that one's also like 600 plus pages. I think it's longer than The Secret History. And she said, like, they're on drugs. Like, it's just... people just going around stealing shit. And like, she was just like, I'm confused. There didn't seem to be a plot or plot points, but she basically said exactly what we were saying in The Secret History, is like, it's very drawn out. So that's definitely Donna Tartt's writing style.
Yeah, here's the thing. I probably won't pick up another one of her books. I'm not mad I read this one, but it's slow.
Yeah. I'll say I have not read any of her books, and I probably will not read her again. She really reminds me of Anthony Doerr. I don't know how to pronounce it. But he wrote Cloud Cuckoo Land, which got a lot of hype, and also All the Light We Cannot See or something like that, mm-hmm. which also won the Pulitzer. And they're very similar. He has beautiful writing, but his novels are so slow that you kind of want to bang your head against a wall. But there is payoff at the end. Like, you can see that it's a good book and it's beautifully written, but it's also like, do I recommend it? To be honest, no. And so I think, you know, those books are shorter. Maybe you're more likely to have read them because they're more modern. If you like that, you'll probably like this. If you don't, you probably won't, because this is like this guy to the next level.
So kind of along these, what we've been saying, the question of pacing and how long did it take to read the book? I read it in 2 weeks, and that took some actual effort to like sit down and make myself read it. The pacing's rough, and obviously rough enough the other two didn't even finish it. If you're busy, this is tough pacing.
Yeah.
And they're long chapters.
That's what I was going to point out, is like, I almost think the book would have benefited from more chapters instead of, I mean, the book has 8 chapters and that's it. And it's like a 545 page book. So like the chapters are a good, like somewhere between 50 and 100 pages. So it takes a while to even get to a conclusion or stopping point. And I think the book would have really benefited from a breakup of chapters a lot more.
Absolutely.
It definitely would have. That's another one of my major comments is, you know, I didn't reach the end of the book, so I don't know how much could have been cut out, but you get the sense that like you could cut the book in half and then add like 30 more chapters and it would be a much more satisfying read.
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate like, you know, every thought this narrative character is having, and you've figure out why it's so detailed later.
Mm-hmm.
It still didn't need to be that detailed. I mean, it's masterful. I will give that. The writing's fine. The writing's great. But it's like way too detailed. Like, it's finesse in the details, but then it goes overboard.
For me, it's also character choice. Like, I understand and I agree with character development. And I understand having a main character who is unlikable at first, or other characters who are unlikable at first. I even think Cersei is a great example of a book we all loved where the main character is not very likable at first. But it's like, give me something to root for, give me some point of interest. I found him incredibly boring. And that's what made the book so hard to get through, is I'm like, if you told this story from a different person's perspective, I probably would have enjoyed it. Yeah. But I cannot live inside this man's head. Like,
I want to push us to the last question of the pre-spoilers, just because that is one of our discussion topics later. Would you watch a movie or a TV show?
Fuck no.
You know, I would maybe give a movie a shot, because if it's like 2 hours long, I mean, because in a movie, you have to edit down a lot of the book. Like, no 500 page book stays in its entirety in a movie form. So I could almost see myself watching a movie and calling myself satisfied.
Here's what I think would make it worth watching. I want Jordan Peele as the producer, and I want Richard to be Black.
Hmm.
Okay, maybe. If that was true, I'd watch it.
That'd be some Get Out type shit.
But I think what I see in this book is like, and Caitlin, I'm taking your word for it. I mean, I'm sure you're right. Is like, if so much of like the finesse of the book is in like laying these details and then like having this like extremely intricate thing come together later, it's really hard to do that in a movie. You can't just like plod along in the same sense. So I kind of feel like how you did about Babel, where you were like, just to strip the book down, like, defeats the purpose. I'm like, to strip this book down is just like, it's just defeats the purpose. And I just don't think I'd watch it.
I think that's fair. So now, the big question. What are your busy girl ratings?
This is another zero for me.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't give a quality rating because I didn't finish it, so I felt uncomfortable giving that. But I will give it a busy girl rating of a zero because I didn't finish it.
I'm gonna give it like a two or a one. It's not impossible. And like I said, I got to the end. I was like, okay. Like, not mad I read it. It's hard to pick up and put down because of there being no stopping points. But I think if this is your genre, if you like psychological thrillers and kind of dark academia, very high intellect kind of topics, this is probably a great book for you. But it's long, so...
It's crazy because I feel like I like all those things and I just could not get into this book.
Yeah. And we'll get in. Let's get into that a little more because I have a point I want to bring up. Mm-hmm. So, spoiler alert, this is the section you can come back to after you've read it or just blow through if you want to be like Casey and Catherine. Casey's going to learn the ending right now.
Yeah. Caitlin's about to be in her bag. The only one who actually knows what's going on.
So, I think... And this kind of jumps on what Casey was talking about with the narrator, Richard. I think the main issue with this book that makes it hard for some people to read is that there is no likable character. Not one. You are not rooting for anybody. There's a few at the beginning. You're like, oh, they're kind of interesting. Oh, maybe I'll like them. And by the end, you're like, shit, hell no. These are all terrible people. And so I think... You know, a lot of us want some moral good in a story. There is none. None whatsoever.
Yeah. Because, you know, I love a complicated character. I love a bad boy with a heart of gold. I like even the guest list where there wasn't a ton of likable characters. There was at least one I could attach to in the guest list, and it was shorter. And I appreciated the complexity and the unlikability of those murder mystery characters. So I can appreciate a book that has unlikable characters. But when your narrator is completely unlikable, you have to have a sub character that is likable so that you can attach to someone and relate to someone. I could not relate to Richard in any way, shape, or form.
And I don't think most people are going to.
Yeah. I think the point I would make about this, and I'm going to bring up the Atlas Six. Because I think this is something that book did masterfully, because I also did not like the guest list very much. I think there is a difference between a unlikable character and a complex character. And I think particularly in literature, people write an unlikable character and then ask you, because it's like quote unquote different, ask you to like accept that as being complex. Any character that is truly good or truly evil is not complex. Any character that is all of one thing or all of another is not complex. Morally gray, both good and bad, is what is a complex, believable, well-rounded character. To me, I don't know because I didn't finish it. To me, this book served unlikable as if it was complex. And that is what made it so insufferable to me. That's also part of why I didn't like the guest list, is I was like, these people aren't real to me. They're not interesting to me even. I just feel like they're just like conceited, privileged psychopaths. And I don't find that interesting.
I think that's fair. I think Richard is not complex. I think he's genuinely unlikable. I think the story is how he gets swept into things that are over his head and not in him being a good person or a good character.
So. Then it's just not interesting. I'm like, it's like, you can't, like, there's no way to salvage the plot for me. I don't want to read a book with no character that I find interesting.
Totally fair.
But.
Well,
It's art. I believe all of you who finished it.
To talk about a part of the book you guys did read, the first little chapter, prologue, I don't know what it is. They talk about, hey, we shoved this guy off a cliff and killed him. And they didn't find his body for a long time. And then it just starts into, they go from there to like sitting through this boring ass Greek classes and talking about super over my head topics I didn't plan on reading about in this book. What did you guys think of the beginning?
I didn't hate it. I think it spoiled too much. I think you can have a prologue that's in the future and then bounce back to like, let's recap the events and break the fourth wall if you don't spoil who died or the causes or reasoning behind it. It felt like I knew everything and could expect everything for the first 50% of the book. And that pissed me off a bit because I like to guess, but I don't like to just flat out know and like be like, okay, so I know this guy's gonna die, I know the exact person who's gonna die, and I know who's gonna kill him, so why am I continuing to read?
And to be clear, this is written sort of like a memoir from Richard's perspective, mm-hmm. which is why it kind of reads that way. I will give you though, it spoiled a lot.
Yes. I completely agree, Catherine. That was another, like, if my two major critiques are probably like the character rant I just went on, and then also this, where obviously, like, by the end of the book, there's some sort of things that are surprising that, like, I can believe that. But the beginning does not introduce any sense of intrigue. The fact that you know that Bunny is dead, I think, also, like, heavily gives away the murder that happens. And so, like, I had no sense of curiosity. The whole first half of the book, you're reading things that you already know will happen. Like, and that just is like completely like dead, no tension, no driver for me. And so I think that was the other reason why I couldn't get into it, is I was like, when am I going to read something that I don't already know? When am I going to read something surprising or like unexpected? And it does not happen in the first 200 pages.
And Caitlin, you talked about like it reads like a memoir and it's like written like a memoir. The thing about memoirs is people read them about people they're interested in.
Correct.
I'm not interested in Richard's memoir, so therefore, why would I read his memoir?
This is a memoir by a weird ass dude who no one liked and no one wants to read about, and so no one edited.
Yeah, this is a self-published.
It's like stream of consciousness for a lot of it, and people are calling it prose, and I'm like, oh. I'm like I said, it's really good writing. It's just a lot. And then I want to, you guys didn't get here either, but to go along with kind of what you're saying about reading about stuff you know about from this like prologue, you get 3/4 of the way through the book and the tension is building because you know Bunny's going to die, but you don't know how it's going to come about. And you're like, it's slowly building to it. And it gets a little interesting then because you're like, okay,
I honestly cannot believe Bunny survives that long.
Well, here's the thing. So you're like 3/4 of the way through the book and Bunny dies. And mm-hmm. then you're like looking at the rest of the 100-150 pages. You're like, wait, what's the rest of the book about?
Yeah, because that's the part I got to. I literally got to Bunny just fell off a cliff and I said, who could fucking care?
It does get interesting. You guys probably still wouldn't think it was interesting. I thought it got a little interesting.
I like read 10 pages after that and I was like not interested in the fallout of his death at all.
Okay, so these are not psychological thriller girlies.
No.
Maybe a psychological thriller with a little more thrill.
That's the point of psychological. It's not quite so action thrilly. It's all in the details and the thinking and the words that are said.
I know. But with some more tension, like that, like I said, like that driver of the unknown, or even a character that I'm curious about, like
it does get tense. And I will say, once Bunny is dead and you get through some little bits after that, you're kind of like, well, now I'm a little stressed because I don't know where this is going. Because you knew where it was going the whole time. And now you're like, oh, things are getting a little crazy. People are getting a little crazy.
I believe that. And I could kind of see it happening. And when I dropped off, I guess just because I didn't like any of the characters, I didn't really care about their fallout is my issue. But I feel like I am dogging on this book a lot, and I know people are going to come at me for it. The author is a good writer. I'm not knocking her writing and not knocking her writing style. And like, if this is stuff you like, then like 100% like advocate for it. It's great. It's just not my cup of tea. And if you're going to do a psychological thriller, maybe do it in 300 pages or less.
Sure. And like, Babel, beautiful writing. Oh my God, she's a fantastic author. Wasn't my cup of tea. Well, I still recommend it to certain people. Yes, because I know what they like. It's not my cup of tea, but it definitely is theirs. Same thing with this book. We just all three happen to have pretty similar tastes. So
this that's book a bummer. Would be epitome of not for everyone.
Yeah.
If you have if you know a local devil's advocate, he will love this.
And I know the reviews are high, but that I think is because a lot of the reviews I saw were DNFs, so they weren't rated.
Yeah.
Anyway, enough about characters. Let's talk about setting. You are in Hampton, right?
Yep.
Hampton, Vermont. It's a snowy little mountain town, very picturesque, kind of foggy in the mornings, kind of like, and the descriptions of the landscape are amazing. You can picture all of it. What did you guys think about Vermont and this weird eclectic group of kids dumped in it?
I mean, I could totally see this happening in Vermont. Like, this shit would happen in Vermont, where a bunch of culty Greek elitist university kids murder a farmer and then murder their friend who's snitching.
They do make fun of the Vermonters a lot in this book, too. I wonder if Donna Tartt hates Vermont people.
Yeah, she does. Yeah, to me, the setting was kind of neither like an addition or a subtraction. I felt like it made sense for the story and as like the setting of like more of a pretentious East Coast vibe. I was like, okay. But I didn't really love it or hate it. I just kind of felt like that feels appropriate.
Okay. Well, another setting would be Julian's classroom. The weird professor who's alone in this building, seemingly in this office of his. It's a whole ass classroom with like tea and cozy armchairs and things. What did you think about Greek class and the gang when Richard kind of stumbles into this group?
So I actually found Julian kind of intriguing, and at least the point where I have, at least to the point that I've read so far, he actually is not really in the book very much. And so I thought that his class and him, because Richard is so fascinated by Julian, I thought he would be a bigger part of the novel. Maybe that's true later, but I was honestly surprised by how little he mattered. I felt like it was kind of like a little bit of a disappointment.
Yeah.
I will give you this for your curiosity of Julian. Mm-hmm. He remains sort of irrelevant just there. Other than his relationship being so close with Henry becomes the major character point of him. And in the end, him like taking his trust from Henry makes the whole climax happen, basically.
Okay. Mm.
So there's that.
Well,
we can get there when we get to the ending, but
yeah. I guess Julian was just an interesting character. I mean, like, he had some hot takes when it came to like society and like very Neanderthal takes almost. I don't want to say that because like he's like thinking ancient Greek, but he's like literally saying like we should live in that society as if we haven't evolved from that. And like he had a very like misogynistic views of the world. So I didn't totally like agree with him, but I was fascinated by him as a character and why he had these views and like wanted to dissect it more.
I want to ask you, because I think you both would have reached this point. Julian and some of his discussions lead to this point of the Bacchanalia.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I thought that was such a random ass way to rope in a murder. But yeah. Also, I thought it was kind of interesting. I thought it was going to go some like magical realism route.
I almost wish it did.
That's what I was hoping.
So here's my thing. Here's where I'm at in the book. I don't believe them. I mean, I can believe they were trying to achieve this Bacchanalia thing, but I think they just murdered someone. I was like, I don't believe that you woke up and didn't know what happened. I think you all fucking murdered someone. With Henry as the leader. Like, I don't trust them. I don't believe them. I think that they are liars and they lie a lot. They lie to each other and they lie to Richard. And at this point in the book, you've seen it multiple times. So I think they're lying.
Yeah.
I will say they stick to it the entire book.
I'd believe that, honestly.
Like, various characters bring up different parts of it to Richard alone, independently. And sounds like some people were whacked out of their minds.
Yeah,
I don't know. Was Henry whacked out of his mind or did he just murder someone? I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's that scene at the very beginning where Henry like fucks someone up on the dance floor. And I think that that scene was introduced to introduce doubt when this happens of being like, is how much of this is really true? I can believe that all the others got kind of caught up in Henry's scheme, but I just don't believe that Henry was like in some innocent, caught off guard bystander.
And they were basically mixing drugs and getting high as kikes. Like, I mean, there's songs about how I got so high, I saw Jesus. Like, I mean, people will hallucinate things when they're
got on. Got so high, I saw Dionysus.
Yeah.
Why can't I say that right now? I said it earlier to someone. I was explaining this.
I 100% don't believe they actually saw a god. I 100% believe they were high out of their minds. Don't necessarily believe that Henry didn't know he was murdering someone.
Okay, interesting. Okay, so you kind of find out about this Bacchanalia murder, whatever this is. Rave gone wrong. Oh, let's go with that. You find it out when Richard is like kind of staying with Henry after this weird ass near death experience. And I don't even want to go into that one, but he finds out that all of his Greek homies are going to Argentina with no return booked. And he's like, what? And he starts digging into it. What did you think? Did that intrigue you or were you just like, meh?
You know, this, because Argentina is always like thrown around as the place where expats go to get away from the law. Like, it's just like that's.
Oh, yeah. I was like Hitler. Butch Cassidy. And then I turned the page and they were like Butch Cassidy.
Yeah. And then they talked about like Hitler's Goonies and like.
Right.
Yeah. Like, I knew that that's the place where everyone thinks of whenever they're trying to get away from the law. I mean, that's the thing is like up to the point I got to, I predicted pretty much everything. And then also after I read the SparkNotes version, I predicted, I want to say 90% of the plot twist. There was one thing that I didn't predict and that I pretty much couldn't predict. But the rest of it, I was like, nah, that's totally what I thought.
Also, to be fair, Catherine and I just went to Argentina. We did not meet any long lost criminals.
No.
But I could see how you could disappear in like the southern reaches. Like there was no one there.
It's remote.
So that made it interesting. I was hoping they'd end up in Argentina and then they didn't actually go, so I was kind of sad.
Nuts.
Yeah, no, I was the same. I have predicted everything thus far. I've predicted everything that I've heard mentioned so far. And I knew they weren't going to go to Argentina because everybody's got to be in the United States to kill Bunny. And also there was like 300 pages left in the book, so I was like, they're not fleeing. So we'll see what happens.
So you find out, on that note, that they don't end up going to Argentina because they're found out by Richard, basically. Richard finds out the whole thing. And then he figures out that all these super rich kids that he's friends with suddenly have no money. And it's basically because Bunny's been extorting them and blackmailing them because he found out they did this without him and felt left out. And instead of feeling bad about like the murder, he's like, I wasn't there. And it's extorting them. So, what did you think? Was that reason enough to murder Bunny? Because, like, eventually they sort of talked Richard into, like, yeah, this is the only course of action.
So, there's a line that I just read that I think perfectly demonstrates how I feel about this. And it's that when they all get back, it's like when Henry is first telling Richard what they had really done, he talks about the tension with Bunny. And so when they all get back to Henry's apartment and they're all covered in blood, Henry is livid that Bunny is there and that he has eaten ice cream, and the ice cream has melted all over the chair and the carpet. And Henry is actually incensed by this. And I get it. Bunny is a fucking awful person. He's the worst. Everything he does is annoying, and he's a terrible friend and a terrible person. But I don't think they murder him because he knows. I think they murder him because they hate him. And it's convenient that they now have a reason, because look, they did the murder. And I can't even remember where I was going with this. My point is just that I think that they're just psychopaths, and you murder one person and you're a psychopath, you might as well murder another person, especially if someone who's been using you and taking advantage of you and who it sucks. I think that they were just like, this is as good a reason as any to murder someone, so let's do it.
So here's where I think the writing is really actually interesting and great, is that they so perfectly just say things that seem so normal that end up adding up to convince Richard that, like, yeah, we definitely gotta murder Bunny.
Yeah.
And it's all so normal that you, like, you see it coming, but you see how someone couldn't see it coming. And then suddenly he's like, oh man, I am in this, and this is it. I have to play along. And I do think the writing is really good there, how that comes about. Once again, a little more drawn out than it needs to be, but I will give credit. It's like, how did I accidentally become a murderer? And that's how. Like, she wrote that really well.
Yeah. Just like little issues that Bunny has, like quips against Richard and stuff like that. Like, Richard's like, oh, I love him, I wouldn't do this to him. But then at the same time, then he's slowly convincing himself to murder Bunny. So, like, yeah, it's good writing there. I will say, I listened to part of it on audiobook just to force myself to listen to it while I'm working, because I knew I wasn't going to get it done. The audiobook reader, I don't know who narrates it, I swear to God, narrates the most annoying voice in the entire world for Bunny. So that might have made me hate him so much so that by this point I was like, yeah, kill him, please, so I don't have to listen to this fucking voice.
I feel like you get there and you're like, wow, I know this is wrong, but like, yeah, I see why they're doing it. Like, that's where the writing is really great.
Yeah, snitches get stitches.
So halfway through, three quarters way through, Bunny finally does die. They really do push him off a cliff, like it says in the beginning. Mm-hmm. And you kind of learn the nuance of it. And then it snows in like May in Vermont, and they weren't expecting it. So no one finds Bunny's body. So they have to hold this in, pretend they are worried about their friend, and the tension builds and people start to snap. Catherine, did you make it that far?
No.
Okay. So things get interesting here. Francis gets very stressed and his hypochondriac kicks in. Henry gets very suspicious and rogue, and you're like kind of thinking for a hot second he might kill Richard next. And then you figure out, because Charles starts to snap like in a really crazy way, you figure out that him and Camilla, his twin sister, were probably doing it.
I saw that the entire time.
I mean, I saw that coming from the beginning. Weird.
But when it was confirmed, I was like, ah, really, guys? We had like, to add incest.
Twin incest. No.
And Henry and Camilla were like together secretly this whole time. And it, anyway, also splitting up the twins because Camilla's afraid of Charles is kind of what brings us to the actual tipping point. Charles gets arrested at one point driving Henry's car. Henry's super mad because he's already mad at Charles because he's trying to punish Camilla, blah, blah, blah. Here's where I'm just going to summarize for you towards the end, because y'all didn't finish it. But basically, Charles snaps, ends up in the hospital. My thought is Henry maybe poisoned him with the mushrooms he intended for Bunny. That's really what it reads like, and it didn't work. He ends up getting out of the hospital eventually. Julian finds out they killed Bunny, was kind of like, oh, and then left the country. And so they didn't get to finish their classes.
Oh my God.
They're all kind of like, shit, what do we do? Because they're like, basically, we're going to just cut this program altogether. So you can either like redo this year or like leave. Because Julian leaves because he finds out about this. So Henry spirals. Francis and Richard take Charles to find Camilla and Henry. They accidentally lead Charles to Camilla, basically. Henry's protecting her at this hotel. Charles has taken this gun from the summer house they like to vacation in and walks into the hotel room, is like threatening to shoot Henry. Well, big old Henry disarms Charles and goes to shoot him. But instead, like, they whack his hand. I think it was him at this point. And he ends up shooting Richard. And then Henry blows his own brains out.
All right. Cool. That's the only thing I haven't guessed is Henry killing
everything.
Himself.
That was what I was talking about when I was reading the script notes. That's the only thing I wouldn't have guessed. Yeah. The rest of it I saw coming.
Yeah. 100%. And so, yeah, that was like the big, big twist is Henry is just kind of like, I lost Julian. I wasn't going to pursue any of this anyway. Everything's too chaotic. I've killed two people and I kind of liked it. So he shoots himself.
Cool.
Yeah. That feels.
What are your thoughts?
I don't care.
It wouldn't have been worth reading to?
No.
No.
Well.
I understand, like, reading Spark Notes, the analysis of it is, like, Henry wants to die kind of like an ancient Greek hero and kind of make himself out to be this, like, martyr hero, like, that he's saving Camilla and saving the group by killing himself. And I'm just like, I understand the plot device using this ancient Greek class and then going through a Greek tragedy and Greek heroes. Totally understand. But I hated the Iliad, so yeah. I'm not going to like this.
Also why it's so guessable and predictable is because I'm like, obviously this is all a Greek tragedy, like I get it.
Here's why I think people enjoy it, and here's why I started to actually like the book. I'm not saying I like the whole thing. I did like, though, from Bunny's funeral on, you could start to see the psychotic breaks in the signs, and you could kind of feel Richard's rising panic as he watched this happen and started having his own kind of psychotic breaks too. Like, the mental game of this was really, really well written and had you kind of flipping to see who was going to break first. And then afterwards, you get like the follow-up. Richard's the only one who ever finishes any sort of degree. Francis like tries to off himself multiple times. And like Richard ends up coming back across the country to like save him, sit with him. He meets back up with Camilla. Camilla's never gotten over Henry. And Charles has like become a criminal and moved to Texas with some lady. I don't know. And you start to see how these pieces all fell together to make these characters into what they are. And it is kind of interesting because like you can see step by step how their mental health just deteriorated from everything that had happened. But beauty in the details, too many details though.
Yeah.
Well.
Well, now that I know the ending, I don't have to finish it.
You said you already looked up the ending.
Yeah, no, I already did. I wasn't going to finish it anyway.
Casey said she might, but I would say, yes, it's slow, but the takeaway is if you like books with lots of details that pile onto each other to bring about some interesting things in the end, this is your kind of book. But if you're just reading for action and the thriller part of it, not for you.
Or if you want both, read ACOTAR.
Okay, well, here we'll get into... Let's talk about book recommendations, because I've actually been thinking pretty hard about this. Is, I was like, this really reminds me of something else I have read that I also like didn't love, but was like, okay. And I realized what it was. It's another book that's been pretty consistently popular in the book community, and it is The Silent Patient, which is a psychological thriller. Largely ends up kind of predictable, and you get to see, like, detail by detail how a psychological break happens. So I'd say if you like that stuff, there's a shorter option for you with a little more action, but it's still very similar in the type of psychological thriller it is.
I mean, we've been alluding to it throughout this whole episode, Babel. It's very similar in the sense it's dark academia. It's the dissection of language and kind of like the power of language when you have this Greek. You also have Greek in Babel and Latin and Chinese and stuff like that. And it's longer, a lot more details, a lot more character development, core group kind of mentality. And they also deal with some of similar issues. But I think why I like Babel more than this book is it adds on a layer of fantasy and dark fantasy and magical realism kind of coming alive. And I think that's what kept me into it, is because it's like not, it's past London, but it's not the past London, you know, but then it also adds in like colonialism, and there's a lot more depth, I think, to Babel. So I think you would like it if you liked this book. I would definitely recommend Babel over this book.
There's also racism and sexism. Yay.
Yes. Yeah. But I feel like it's dissected a lot more in Babel.
Yeah, it's pretty unapologetic in Secret this History. Book.
Yeah. Yes.
I think that's a great recommendation. I think if you like J.D. Salinger, you should read this book. I think if you read this book and liked it, you should read J.D. Salinger. I also think, like I mentioned, Cloud Cuckoo Land kind of serves a very similar writing style to this, not a psychological thriller, but I think if you're into like the very, very slow pieces slowly being laid type book, that's like a great one. I mean, it's not a great one. I didn't like it, but I think you would like it if you like this book. But what I'm going to recommend is The Atlas Six. This is a group of students, most of them extremely morally gray, who I all found interesting, much less generally problematic. They also have to convince all of each other of a murder. And I just thought it was a lot more interesting way to do that. A fantasy read, though. So, you know, a little bit different, but I think some of the elements.
I'd say magical realism.
Yeah, it's like magic if magic was science.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I think if you've listened to this and you're like, man, I'm not reading. What's this book called? A Secret History. Oh, my God. I think The Atlas Six has the parts of this book that are good.
Basically, what this book needed was a heap of fantasy.
Yeah.
Yeah. A little more action, maybe. Or just a little less inner monologue.
Pacing. Much better pacing. Much more interesting people.
Like we said, excellent writing. Her writing is extremely descriptive. You can picture everything. You understand why characters make the decisions they make. So, yeah. I want to say, these are just our opinions, okay? Mm-hmm. We don't all have to like the same books. I know a girl who literally had to delete all of her social media because she posted she didn't like this book and people were horrible to her. Guys, that's why we review books. You find someone who is like-minded to you and you read like what they recommend because you're like-minded. You don't have to be like-minded to everyone. So there's our takeaway from this. Just because we didn't love it doesn't mean you won't love it yourself.
Yeah. And if you did love this book, we'd love to hear from you too. I'm sure there are things that we missed, things that you think we didn't appreciate fully. And I think that's totally fair. So hit us up at Busy Girls Pod on almost all platforms.
Yeah. And this was a Busy Girls Book Club first of DNFing books.
Yeah.
So I hope this doesn't happen.
Three.
Yeah. Two out of three. I'm hoping this doesn't happen in the future, but that's what we're here for, is to tell you as busy young professionals if it's worth your time. And obviously for us, it wasn't. So
right. That's the reality. We're letting you know whether you have the time to do this. And in this case, you maybe don't.
I did text Catherine and I was like, please tell me you haven't finished it because I'm not even close to finishing it.
Oh yeah, we DM'd each other and we're just like,
Also, I'm going to be smug about having this finished like over a week ago for a while because I feel like I'm usually the one finishing things last minute. So I'm just going to take this victory for a hot second. Yeah.
You deserve it.
You're the 5-star busy girl for now. We're the slackers.
We're the degenerates. It's fine.
And I was the one who pushed this book, but that's because I saw it literally everywhere.
It's so popular, but we have to tell you not to read it.
Okay, I didn't say that. But anyway, on that note, I'm Caitlin.
I'm Catherine.
And I'm Casey. Thanks for listening. And when you get a chance, take a break with the Busy Girls Book Club.